Hello, everyone, and welcome to Creative Psychopaths, a horror movie podcast and the world's premier kitchen for horror sandwiches. What are horror sandwiches, I hear you ask? Well, it's a lovely movie filling surrounded by two slices of chatty goodness. My name's Mark, and as always, I'm joined by Matthew. Hello there.
Hello.
How are you this fine Saturday? Oh,
Thursday.
Thursday.
Definitely a Thursday.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
But I'm good. I had the day off work this Thursday.
Oh, lovely. A lovely weekend Thursday.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely. And you enjoyed the day.
One of those fake Thursdays that almost got me fired.
Well, this week we are joined by a lovely guest from... Another one from the movie Jewel. We've got Nicole here. Hello.
Hello. I think it's mandatory at this point. You'll get all of us sooner or later.
Yeah.
We're 60% of the way.
Yeah, we might as well complete the collection at some point.
Right. Get the whole set.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I appreciate you fellows recording so late for you to accommodate my American schedule.
Well, that's okay.
I would say it's the spookiest hour, but I think we're still a bit, like, 2 hours off that, at least.
Nearly spooky. Close to being spooky. On the cusp of spookiness.
Neo-spookiness.
Oh, I like that. What do I know? I normally have a bit of something to say before we get into it. Documentaries, that's what I was going to talk about. Because I've started watching a documentary called Tickled. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of this.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. I've just started getting into it. It's this documentary where this was like an entertainment reporter, and he just finds this thing where people, it's like a tickling spot, and he thought, oh, this will be fun for a sort of short segment on news. And then it sort of really takes a sort of severely dark turn. So I'm looking at watching that at the moment. Also introduced to a couple of others, which there's one about sleep paralysis, but I think it's done in a sort of mix of horror style as well. Now, if only I could remember what that one was called. Don't worry, I'll get there. The Night's
Off. I mean, you're keeping it jolly, then, at least.
Well, I just think it a bit of fun to sort of spread your horror into real life, you know, since that's the way horror
goes. You don't fancy that Mr. Rogers documentary, then?
No, well, I've seen that. I've seen the Mr. Rogers documentary, I believe. He was a thoroughly nice chap.
Yeah, we didn't really get him over here, did we?
No, we didn't. We didn't. But, yeah, he was definitely a thoroughly nice chap.
That's good to know. I was sort of dreading after he passed on that something would surface, something horrible and ugly, and I'm not ready for Mr. Rogers to be a bad person secretly.
No, it just turned out he was just really nice and really almost ahead of his time to a degree.
I think the UK have kind of cornered the market on beloved children entertainers turning out to be truly, truly awful people.
Yeah, we've done a good job there. Yeah. Mind you, we did have some really batshit cartoons, so that's fun. Anyway.
Well, you guys are responsible for When the Wind Blows, so talking about really dark cartoons.
Oh, yeah, When the Wind Blows. We did Threads recently where we talked about that, and when the Wind Blows is very much a sort of, not really a companion piece, it's a very similar movie. So, yeah.
I mean, even that, the other Raymond Briggs one, The Snowman, which is, that's miserable and awful as all hell as well. Okay. I don't understand how it's a beloved Christmas classic.
Well, it's wonderful until the last, you know, 2 minutes, and then all the children burst into tears.
I always hate walking in the air.
You always hated walking in the air.
Oh, I hated it so much. Alice Jones' awful voice. I mean, I'm sure it's a a wonderful singing voice from a technical standpoint, but it nails on a chalkboard.
It's not actually Ali Jones in that film.
Is it not?
No. No. It is. Ali Jones actually sung the version. There was a Toys R Us advert, and he sang the version for that. And he often gets...
You flipped my world upside down, frankly. I've harboured this grudge against Ali Jones for so long.
Peter Orty, his name was. He was the person who sang it in the movie.
Ah.
I've got a new enemy then.
Yeah, maybe.
I was going to say, there's someone else you should have been hating all along.
Yeah, I hereby apologise to Ali Jones and by extension, the whole of Wales.
But yeah, there you go, you see. So that's one of those things. Like, everyone always thinks about Tim Burton for Nightmare on Elm Street. Nightmare on Elm Street, The Nightmare Before Christmas. But it weren't him. It was older fellow. Anyway, we're rambling too much now. Let's get into talking to Nicole about the lovely questions, the first slice of bread, the things we love to ask new people, and I'll stop rambling. So let's chuck the first two together. So what is the first horror movie you can remember seeing, and when did you become a horror fan?
Oh, those two things were pretty far apart for me. The first thing I remember seeing, I think I was about 6, and I inadvertently saw Psycho on television.
Oh, dear.
And they don't edit out much, if anything. And I was terrified and became a big scaredy cat, and I didn't really get like into horror until my 30s. Although in my 20s, I did go see Scream and Seven in the theater because they had such good critical reviews. And so I was curious and I went to see them and I was like, oh yeah, I could see, you know, why. But in my 30s, I actively started pursuing it to try to demystify them and desensitize myself a little bit, and discovered that they're sort of this rich vein of treasure. For the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Psycho's a bit of a door, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was actually on the other end of that. When I was probably 10 or 11, Psycho came on while it was just me and my siblings in the house. So my sister, who would have been about sort of 6 or 7 years old as well. So it came on right as the shower scene came on. And it absolutely traumatized her. She was properly terrified. So because me and my brother, you know, were much older and, you know, we were supposed to be babysitting and being responsible, like, we went into full panic mode. You know, we'll buy you sweets if you don't tell mum and dad, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And then we had to try and explain to her how that it wasn't real blood, and it was and our various theories of, you know, ketchup and animal blood. Turns out it was chocolate syrup.
Yeah. One of the most innocuous things of all that it could have been.
Yeah, I still remember that. And I think it still Yeah. I think if we'd have gone with that, you know, we'd have probably been able to chill her out quicker because, you know, girl loves chocolate. So, we eventually it became a fun family anecdote. But I think she is still very much a chicken when it comes to horror movies and whatnot.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that'll do it. That'll do it for sure. So, when you became a horror fan, can you sort of remember what sort of movie would made you go, oh, this is definitely for me? Or was it just a sort of collection of watching things and eventually going, yeah, I like this, I think?
I think it was mostly a collection of watching things. I'd say that the psychological horror is more for me. Not really a big slasher fan, although I've certainly seen some. And I made myself, as part of the desensitization process, I made myself watch like some torture porny kind of films. I think I watched the first couple of Saw films. I watched this movie called 7 Days, which is this Canadian film about a man who captures someone who he suspects of doing something awful to his daughter, and he basically just tortures him for 7 days.
Oh, I've seen that.
And yeah, and I mean, it's actually got this moment in it that I found weirdly touching. There's this scene where he's imagining him giving his daughter a bath, and it's just this incredibly sad moment where he's sort of coming to grips with the reality of the situation, and in the middle of this absolutely horrific stuff he's doing because he happens to be a doctor and gets kind of creative with it. But I've discovered that I'm much more the psychological sort of thing. So, all the Hitchcocks and things like Ari Aster's movies, except for Beau Is Afraid, did not enjoy that. Not my thing. But like Midsommar and Hereditary, and just I like things that play with your head a little bit and scare you with things that are less obvious than here's somebody with a big weapon who's going to whack you with it.
Yeah, the sort of
Yeah, I
movies
mean,
that.
Boy's Afraid, it does end with a big weapon that's going to attack, isn't it? So,
I didn't get that far. I got about 40 minutes in. I'm like,
but for the
does this
people that
get any
did,
less miserable? And the answer was no. So I'm like, no, I'm done. That's
yeah, I think
all
I
I can
got about an
manage.
hour and a half in before I gave up.
But for those who haven't seen it, the big weapon in question, it's an innuendo. I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But I did watch it all and I loved it.
Fair enough.
But I'm saying that with the timings for that, so you saw Scream and stuff in cinemas and then came back. So 10 years or so later. So would that have, been the contemporary stuff that brought you back or well, brought you in, because that's kind of the elevated horror boom, wasn't it?
It's
And that,
what
yeah.
has brought me to making a point to go see horror in the cinema while it's on the big screen is that this, yeah, the new wave, the new, I don't know, not golden age, but whatever it is. I don't know if I'd call it elevated horror. I think I just think of it as bro, a big part of it, like art house horror for horror that's just more focused on the mental and emotional components of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the term myself either. It's because how it's used to describe this modern idea of horror, but how are you supposed to elevate The Exorcist or The Shining? They're pretty elevated already,
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh well, let's move then. Let's move on. I'm going to move on to your favorite franchise because I get the feeling you're not a franchise person.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You had sent me this ahead of time, and I was just like, "What's my favorite horror franchise?" I don't really have one. I've never gone to a horror movie because it's a sequel to one that I liked before. Because I feel like for horror, especially, number one, the things that tend to be franchised tend to be, not always, but tend to be like the slasher genre
Yeah,
kind of
right.
type films. With the exception of, say, The Conjuring or what have you. But I feel like the quality almost always goes down for horror movie sequels. And Plus, you already know the form that the scares are likely to take, so the element of surprise isn't as strong. And I mean, that's one of the great things about horror, when it can surprise you with a scare, like not necessarily a jump scare, but scaring you with something that you're surprised has come up in the film, or something you didn't know you were scared of until they have triggered something in you with how creatively they've done it. I guess I would say the ones with the best average quality is probably the Hannibal films, I would say. You know, like the Alien, like the first four, if we stuck with just those, then I would say that one. But then they kept making them. And I'm just not a big fan of Covenant, and Prometheus I have big problems with. So, and they're going to keep going. Just like, let it.
Romulus sounds quite good, though.
Ridley, chill out, you know.
Yes, Romulus does look okay. Whether it will be or not, though. Trailers can be misleading, can't they? Well, I'll move on to potentially another question that might not necessarily be for you then, which is movies that need a sequel or need to stop making sequels.
Well, I came up with answers for both of them.
Yeah, I know. Go mad.
Okay, so the one that should have a sequel, it's like if you have to have one, if you absolutely have to have a sequel, I was thinking it might be cool to have a sequel to Midsommar. Like in the sequel, she can escape the cult, and you could make it a survival horror of her trying to make her way through the Swedish wilderness back to civilization. And maybe she comes across some sort of, creature from Swedish folklore or something out in the forest on her way to try to rescue herself.
Yeah.
And then
I could see Ari Aster doing like a big turn like that. Like, oh, you thought it was going to be a sequel to, but it's something else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You think you're going to get Midsommar 2 and you end up with The Ritual.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just about to say, if you've ever seen The Ritual, that yes. Sounds up that street.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and for stop making sequels, Friday the 13th. I said what I said. Fair enough. Sometimes it's just time. It's time to retire it, you know? There's so many scripts floating around Hollywood that aren't getting made that are so creative and interesting and have new ideas, and they're just not getting done because they don't have a guaranteed payday behind them with the name of a franchise attached to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we haven't had a Friday the 13th in quite a long time. And I mean, although I wouldn't necessarily agree with you on that one, because I do think that even though they are sort of real base things, it's just like, you know what you're getting. You go into it, you know what you're getting. I'm not expecting a good movie. As long as there's plenty of kills and Jason, I'm all right with it. So I've forgiven nearly every... Well, Friday the 13th is my favourite franchise anyway, so I'm quite happy to watch any of them except the 9th one, which is terrible. Really bad. But yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, and I can't see us getting another Friday the 13th movie, but maybe we will, though, because they can't leave it alone, can they? They can't leave any of them alone.
No. They say, we're going to reboot it again.
I think, isn't there A24 doing a Camp Crystal Lake TV series?
Yes, yeah, as I understand, but I don't know what they're going to do with that, though. I mean, is it an origin of Jason, or is it just going to
be... It would be amazing if they took a real left turn and just did, like, Wet Hot American Summer again.
Yeah, maybe. So, best kill.
Okay, now this is funny, after what I just said. Like, I like a good surprise, again, during a horror movie. So there's one scene in this movie from the 70s called The Prophecy, where the mutant bear picks someone up in a sleeping bag and, like, throws them against a tree. There's the Fury also, I think from late 70s, early 80s, there's a kill near the end where someone uses their mind powers to kill someone else. But honestly, I'm sure there are better ones somewhere in the genre, but I actually got a lot of delight out of the liquid nitrogen head smash in Jason X. Even though it's a Friday the 13th movie, if you ask me what my favorite Friday the 13th movie is, I would say Jason X. So just because that was just so delightful to me.
Yeah, no, I unashamedly love Jason X. I think it's great. And yeah, you're not the first person to choose that one. In fact, it's come up a few times.
It's probably the most common one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. Which,
it's just...
Does that make it the right answer?
It's a surprise.
I think it's definitely in that territory now, yeah.
Yeah, I think that might be the right answer to the question now.
Although I would criticize the science of storing your liquid nitrogen in an open sink. It would boil off in like 2 minutes, but...
Well, it's the future.
Yes, yeah. Possibly. Force field, something like that. You know.
Yeah, possibly. It's hard to tell in that film if it's the future or not. Yeah, okay. Well, let's move on to some other the other questions. So, standout effects for you?
I was really impressed by Annihilation, both the practical and the CG effects.
Yeah,
in that I think look really good and they're really creative. And then practical effects that still hold up, if you ask me, are the effects for the 1986 The Fly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I saw that in the theater. I was 14 and my aunt dragged me to it. I don't remember why. And I was thoroughly grossed out and yet somehow almost crying by the end. It's just... But the effects looked very real to me, and I think they still look pretty good by today's standards, even.
Yeah, The Fly absolutely holds up. There's no doubt about it. It's quite an emotional film, The Fly, actually.
Yeah, it's a tragedy.
Yeah, absolute tragedy. Yeah, it's I love that film. Did I have that in my top 10 or not? I can't remember. Who's to say? We did an episode recently where we did our top 10s, but I have no idea what I said. I only know Jaws was at number one.
You did an episode of The Fly as well before, but
yes, yeah, right at the beginning.
It was before my time.
Yeah, right at the beginning where I asked a lot of questions in that about how those transporters were, but the other guy didn't know. The guest I had no idea. I was trying to figure out if it disassembles you, reassembles you, are you technically the same person? But I think that's a question that's been asked quite a few times because it's a Star Trek sort of thing as well, isn't it?
It's a philosophical problem. I forget what it's called. Something, the ship of Theseus, I think it is. Like, if you replace every single part of the ship piece by piece, and it's eventually all new materials, is it still the same ship?
Mm.
Or it is broom.
Right. And is it really disassembling you and reassembling you, or is it recreating you? In which case, it's definitely not the same person.
Yes. It's whether it carries your matter over completely or whether it copies your matter. It's a bit of a weird one. Anyway, don't game one with a fly, I say.
That's why Dr. McCoy doesn't like them.
Yeah.
Can't explain them.
The fly just goes to show that if you're going to have a lab, actually have a closed lab.
Yes. Yeah. Make sure you've got one with the vacuum doors that doesn't.
Maybe don't do it in your ratty loft apartment. And Annihilation, we've had that before, right? I think
Vincent chose that one. Yeah,
Vincent. Yeah,
it's so beautiful.
Yes, yeah, I watched it not long after that, and it is great. And the, like you say, the combination of CG and practical is just great, because I don't often find that CG effects really do much for me, but that one really, really does it. Really does a good job. Yeah. Well, I think before we get into the movie, we've got one more question, which is, what is the scariest horror movie?
I know, I don't, I feel like this isn't seen as very scary, and this film doesn't work nearly so well at home, but I actually saw this in the theater. Paranormal Activity, the first one in the theater, was one where the scares snuck up on me. I just kept thinking in my head, I'm like, this isn't scary. This isn't scary. This isn't scary. Holy shit. Nope. Not okay. Nope. And suddenly hiding behind my hands, just when the, girl gets like dragged out of bed suddenly in the middle of the night, like, nope, not okay. New fear unlocked. So
Yeah, I agree with
I
you
knew I
there.
was right to sleep tucked in, all the with the blanket tucked in all the way around.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that one. That's a brilliant movie. For me, it's a lesson in tension. Yeah, really, really great. Yeah.
Yeah, and subtle sound design. There's this sort of low rumble a lot of the time during the night scenes. It
Yeah,
kind of gets
yeah.
under your skin.
I've liked every Paranormal Activity so far, apart from the last one, which wasn't a Paranormal Activity movie. For some reason, they called Paranormal Activity Next of Kin. They called it a Paranormal Activity movie, but it wasn't a Paranormal Activity movie. It was a bit strange.
No, I haven't seen any of the sequels.
All right, I would actually recommend going in on those. They're all very similar, but I think there's something about the fact that, when it cuts to nighttime and you're watching those things, it's like you find yourself on edge anyway, because you're like, what's going to happen? And each one of them's very similar. That it starts off with nothing, but you're still sure you're going to see something. I think it's just that waiting to see something that works so well with those films. Yeah.
Just as long as they don't all have terrible boyfriends in them.
Oh yeah, the boyfriend in that, Mika, I think his name is, he's a real prick. Yeah, he just
Yes.
keeps like, stop pushing it.
Yes.
Yeah, agreed. Well, that's it then. Let's move into your movie of choice. And so we're going to be talking about Gonjiam Haunted Asylum from 2018, which is a Korean horror movie. Now, before I started this, I asked Nicole to actually do the pronunciations for this, because, she knows what they are, so saves us butchering it, doesn't it, Matthew?
It does.
So,
All right.
if we could go for the director.
So, yes, director is Jung Boom-sik, written by Jung Boom-sik and Sangmin Park. And star do you want stars or just the character names or?
Starring and characters.
Okay. So, stars. Oh. Looks like they kept their names for the most part. Oh Ah-yeon as Ah-yeon. Wi Ha-jun as Ha-jun. Yoo Ye-jun as Ye-jun. Park Ji-ah as the hospital's director, who's Park Young-ae in the film. Park Ji-hyun as Ji-hyun. Lee Sung-wook as Sung-wook. Yeah, it's just all the same names as the characters, as the actors' names. Park Sung-un and Mun Yi-won as Charlotte, and Jae-yu as also as Yejun. Maybe he's a stand-in in some of the scenes.
Lovely. Yeah, well, that was much better than I could do it, so well done.
Yes.
So, the question is, why this one?
Well, I mean, I had a list of something like 30 movies to start with and had to cut down when you told me I could pick absolutely anything. And slowly got down to short lists of classics, like real classics of the canon. And I checked which films you've done already. And then I had a short list of hidden gem films. And we were like, it's always good to find a hidden gem. So I went with that short list. And then, do you want scary or I forget what the other thing was that I said. There was funny or scary, I think it was. And you said scary. So this, I think, is a hidden gem of a scary found footage film. I caught this on Netflix just sort of idly with my fiance, and we're like, that looks, I hadn't seen this before. This sounds kind of interesting. Do you want to watch that? Sure, let's watch that. And I thought it was much scarier than it had any right to be for, you know, the budget that it's likely got and the non-publicity push that it's gotten in the U.S., and, you know, I proselytize with it and I try to introduce people to it whenever I can.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, I know it's picked up a bit of a reputation actually since it came out, and people, you know, it's definitely become a word of mouth movie. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely become a word of mouth movie. It wasn't easy for me to get here. I had to go down some avenues I wouldn't like to talk about. But this is my sort of genre. I really like found footage movies, or at least the found footage style.
Right.
It reminds me quite a lot of a movie called Grave Encounters.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah, and the themes are very similar. But yeah, this was my first time watching this, so I had a good time. Matthew?
Yeah, I feel like I actually owe an apology for this, because I watched this today in the middle of the day, and it's quite a nice day today, so I watched it in very bright sunlight.
It's kind of hard to see.
the worst possible conditions for watching this, I think. So I'll caveat all of my thoughts with that, because I think I've done the film a disservice with my viewing.
Yeah, there are some scenes that are very dim, and it's very helpful to watch this in a dark room.
Yeah, because I think that with found footage, it does that thing in horror better than any other subgenre, where it gives you the horror in the margins. You know, they get things just in the edge of frame that gives, you know, little scares, little bit ways to build tension. I think because the light was coming in, I think a few of those were probably missed, and I didn't quite get the I did get the environment. I thought the environment was really strong for the film. I enjoyed that a lot. But probably, again, didn't get the full whack of it, because I think really this should be watched like on a laptop, you know, covers over your head, you know, 2 in the morning by yourself, you know. Yeah, it feels like it should be something that that should be like watched in the most sort of discreet way possible. It feels like you're stumbling across something that you shouldn't be privy to. Even though, you know, the premise is that it's a live stream broadcast. It's kind of what it is, YouTube, isn't it? So,
right. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was. Despite that, I still had fun with it. But I think I didn't quite get the full the full whack that I probably would have done normally.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so essentially the plot of this is that a YouTube channel, although it's not actually called YouTube in the film, just for, I suppose, copyright reasons, called Horror Times, go to investigate this psychiatric hospital, which I believe is an actual psychiatric hospital in Korea.
Yes.
But this wasn't filmed at that. It was filmed in a school, I believe. But they tried to follow the floor plan of the actual place. So, you know, there was a lot of work put into that. But that's going behind the scenes. So, yeah, like most of these things, they go investigate, thinking probably that there's not going to be anything there. They hiss whatever off is there and find that, you know, things start going wrong, which is fun.
Yeah, terribly, horribly, terrifyingly wrong.
Yeah. So I think this this does a good job right at the start of just getting all the characters together. You get a sort of generalized sense of who's who, and you know, they give you just enough to, well, as I say, form the group together, so not everyone's just the same person. It's like, oh, I know who that is, and who know who that is, and this is the scared guy, and this is the one who doesn't really know what they're doing, and this is one who's more confident than they should be, and stuff like that. So yeah, that's all good stuff.
Also does a really good job of them bonding as a collective as well.
Yeah, it's very smart. It's got that very smart idea where they make a stop at like a, not quite a water park, but, you know, like some sort of recreational water thing where you're jumping on this giant air trampoline.
Yeah, that looks
or some
fun.
Such, and going into the water when somebody else lands on it, which was cool. All wearing GoPros so you can see their faces, which comes in later on as well. I really like how they make the exposition, I think, as natural as they can. Like the introductory exposition about the background of the psychiatric hospital is done as a promo for the upcoming live stream. So it gives you all the background you need, just compressed into like 5 minutes. So, and then you meet everybody,
and
them meeting each other and bonding.
Yeah, like you say,
you
with
just
that,
jump right in.
You do get YouTube channels that present exactly like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point of any of that stuff where you think that it feels, you know, contrived or part of this world outside of your standard streamer blogger. It very well observed in that sense.
Yeah, it does feel very true to YouTube channels that I've seen. Although I think, I suspect they inflate the amount of money that you can make from a live stream. It's like $1 for every two people watching. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't think you can make that much. So, but who knows?
I love the figures that they throw around. You know, it all will make up $140 million, and it's, oh, that sounds a lot. And then I did the translation. It's like £25,000. It's like, okay, it's a lot of money, but I'm not sure I'd put myself through that for it.
Could be 140 million won, which is the Korean unit, and it's about 1,000 won to the American dollar. So,
it's good money, not great money.
I was watching it thinking, you know, somebody's got money here because they've got two GoPros on each person. You know,
one facing their face so you can get their reaction, and one showing their point of view.
And in what seems like a lot of very expensive technical equipment, you know, while I appreciate it's there for making money, it's like, this is going to be the big score. And it's like, it doesn't feel like it's going to be the big score.
The producer guy he strikes me as the type of guy who's got his own 5-year business plan written out that he wrote when he was 18 and is still carrying that forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really highlights the thing that I think sticks with me whenever these, you know, sorts of true life horror sort of content creators put out, which I do feel a bit guilty for, because, you know, I'm not sure a lot of them are committed, earnest people, but whenever I see those, you know, proof of haunting sort of thing, I'm just like, there's someone there. This isn't this isn't real footage. And right. Yeah, it does a really good job of that guy just staying behind and just being a real jerk.
Yeah.
That sneaks up, you know. I think the jerkiness comes out under stress. As the night goes on that they're broadcasting, he becomes kind of like an Ahab kind of thing, trying to drive everybody to this 1 million viewer goal, whatever it takes.
Yeah. You just take quite a turn, actually. Because I thought he was fine, and then suddenly he was threatening to kill them.
Right.
What happened?
Yeah, that is
here?
Kind of a jump.
Yeah. What happened here? So obviously most of the film is spent in this asylum, you know, with them walking about, and stuff sort of gradually ramps up. We do see that the two of them in there are sort of setting stuff up. I'm not sure. They do like a seance thing, which has got these bells attached to strings, which I thought was interesting anyway.
Yeah, it's visually, it's quite beautiful in some of the shots.
Yeah. And the fact they have it rigged up to drop all the bells, I'm not really sure exactly how that works. But yeah, so it sort of starts as we know it's fake to leading into, oh dear, shit's going down. And there are some, I'd say, well, there's at least one very scary moment, which for me is two of the characters actually decide to get the fuck out of there, which is awesome. They're like, no, screw this sucks.
Yeah, I love to see people behaving reasonably in a horror film. And doing what I would do instead of hanging around for no reason.
Yeah, me too. And I thought, oh, yeah, they're actually leading good stuff. And then one of them sort of pauses, and then this sudden black eyes, whispering face is pretty jarring stuff. That was the one thing that made me go, eesh.
Yeah, that's creepy. Yeah. I guess it's being possessed by the ghosts of the asylum.
Yeah.
That's when I took it.
Yeah, it does
anyway.
Have that kind of a huge group of people talking at once sound to what she's making.
Right. Yeah, if there really are, you know, there's a bit of graffiti on the wall that said 304 angels on it. So if it was really that many patients who died in the asylum, can you imagine, you know, 304 patients all trying to vie for somebody to walk around in all at the same time? Maybe that's what it would sound like. Who knows?
Yeah, that's scary stuff. But go on.
Sorry, go on. I think what the film does do a really good job on this is getting the most out of those scares. Just going back to like a couple of things that we've said already, is that it sets these people up as being very well prepared beforehand. You know, that they say that they sort of do these haunting sites like once a year or something, don't they? And one of the characters has been to like four of the seven CNN's creepiest places list, and then they've got all the equipment and some inside knowledge as well. And then they make good decisions to get out of Dodge, only to find that, you know, he follows them out of it. And I think that when they do that, it makes the situation they're in much worse, because we know that you know, these people aren't amateurs. It's not like, you know, a group of teenagers wander into the wrong part of the woods, is it?
No.
Right. Yeah. Although, oddly, the woman who supposedly has the most experience, you know, who's been to 3 of 7 or whatever, she's the one who's freaking out the loudest and most often out of anybody. You know, she gets really mad then when the guy who's the on-camera host picks up this doll that had, she thinks, moved on its own, and she's freaking out and yelling at him, "You don't touch stuff like that in here." And she's really just completely losing it when they leave the asylum, and she tries to make her way back to the production tent that they have set up, I guess, you know, like a couple hundred meters back in the woods in a big tent with the screens and generator and, for some reason, camp stove and whatnot.
And the tins itself.
Yeah, I mean, they did make the most delicious looking instant noodles I've ever seen.
They know how to do instant noodles in Korea. They've got the technology down. They've got it perfected.
Yeah. Yeah, they did look good.
Those.
Yeah.
Now I want noodles. All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
But other than her and who is it? Yejun, who's the one who's the jerk to the nursing student all the time. I'm not sure. It's like they manage to rub each other the wrong way, and yet they're the ones paired together. But everybody kind of holds it together pretty well for the most part, even the ones who think it's real from the beginning.
Right,
and
yeah.
It's only the, you know, the guys who are part of the crew who flip out because they know what they've already set up and that those stunts are already done and everything that's happening after that is for realsies, and they just can't deal with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff going on here, but I do have to admit that it's so very similar to the movie that I mentioned, Grave Encounters, that I found myself not bored. Bored is the wrong thing, but it's like I've seen this movie before. And there was a whole lot going on in this that goes on in that, which is a slightly older movie. So, you know, there was a bit of that to it that you know, what I wish this movie had done would have leaned a bit more into that sort of, you know, when we see the whispering face, that feels like that sort of horror that you see from that country, whereas some of this stuff feels a lot less like that. And so it did lose some points with me on that one.
A little more cultural flavor.
Yeah, I would have preferred the ghost to be more in that vein, and I think it would have been much scarier. Like, I spent my whole time expecting the movie to have an awful ghost with an extended neck, because they bring that up at some point that someone hung themselves in their neck and like extended. I was like, we're gonna see that, and it's gonna be awful, because you know, this idea of this head sort of listing over to one side extended would have made me like, you know, I would have pushed me over the edge. But
I wonder if I like this better because I saw this before I watched Grave Encounters.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Grave Encounters ain't great. Yeah. But
I think this is executed a little bit better.
Yeah.
I love all the stuff that happens at the end in the room.
Yeah, and I think if I'd seen this first, I would have said that this was amazing and it's what the other thing should have been. But I think because I knew, I sort of really felt like I had an idea of what I was getting into while I was watching it. So Yeah, but like, I'm sort of taking away from the movie, really. It does a good job, and it always impresses me with found footage movies that have got a low budget that you can get genuinely good, sort of believable performances out of people, which they do in this. You know, it never feels like anyone's acting scared. It actually feels like a horrible, scary place that.
Right. Unless it's supposed to look like they're acting scared because they're doing the setup stuff. You know, like the guy on the crew sticks his arm in the box that they
Yeah.
find that's like an upright coffin, and he pretends that it catches him. And you can kind of tell, you know, because we know they've set it up ahead of time, you can kind of tell he's pretending. But you know the girl isn't when she repeats what he did.
There's stuff like that, for example, the boxes that some of that's where the true horror lies is because they show these boxes, you know, and again, it's like the holes aren't at mouth height. So what are they doing? And it's like at some
I was
point
wondering
when
about
this
that
was
myself.
genuinely an asylum, you know, awful things happen to these people. And we know, and we actually know that to be true, you know, back in the days, back in the sort of 50s, 60s, or whatever, these asylums were awful places where people with, you know, just regular mental health conditions got treated like, well, worse than prisoners to a certain degree. So, you know, I think that's why sometimes these movies about asylums and stuff work, because we've got that sense that these were horrible places that people got tortured, you know. So it does have that going for it.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, I love a good person being dragged backwards down a hallway.
Oh, yeah.
There's a good amount of that in here. There's the, you know, reversal of gravity in a couple of places. It gets a little chaotic sometimes because it's POV, you know, when you don't have the person who's aiming the camera from further away, it's kind of harder to tell what's happening. And I mean, I think that works to their advantage with the budget because you can't, you know, you can't see the seams nearly so well because you can't see everything in the frame. But I think there's some point where not only does the furniture stick to the ceiling, but the two men in the room get pulled up to the ceiling and then dropped at some point. And that was pretty scary. And then I found the end super scary. Yeah, but you know, the girl whispering, and then they find themselves in a room, and then they realize there are no doors.
Yeah, yeah.
In the room that they're in.
Actually,
and
the
it's
sort
just like,
of
oh no.
Yeah, the hands quickly covering the faces is freaky stuff. Especially since it's done at that sort of, I don't even know how to explain it. There's this weird horror speed that you get where it's just slightly unnerving. These hands coming around people's eyes. It was good stuff. Yeah. We haven't heard from you, Matthew, in a while. We're just taking it
no,
all
I've
in.
I've just been enjoying listening.
So what do you get much scares out of it then, Matthew? Was it, did it, I mean, I know you watched it at the wrong time of day.
I think the bit that you mentioned with the, you know, the weird noises coming out, can't really describe it very well, but the noise coming out of the girl, and yeah, the one that made me jump was the, I think because I couldn't quite work it out when you first see the sort of that ghost scream and grab the guy by the face. Because I couldn't really like tell, is that in his own hands? Is he shocked? Or is he going Macaulay Culkin on us? Or and I think it did that thing where it tips over there. If you know, there's a ghost grabbing him, that it's corporeal. Then I think the threat increases. And
right,
yeah, that was a bit that got me. On top of just being a fun jump scare at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I the great moment with they're trapped in that room and they look up and there's water on the ceiling like a pool, like as if they're under the surface or looking down at the surface of a pool, except it's above their heads. And they could see someone looking down at them. And it's just, oh, ooh, freaky. Love it.
Yeah.
That was a really good scene. I like the concept and the execution of it were both really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's probably a fairly easy effect to do nowadays with, you know, like Unity or Unreal Engine or something, and just cover it over with the video filter to take out the edges, so to speak.
There was plenty to enjoy about this. I think maybe it hits a slightly faster pace towards the end, where you get more and more, and then it starts blending together a bit. Maybe, I don't know.
I can see that. Although I do like the slowdown with when Charlotte's in the room and she sees somebody sort of standing, seems to have a seam up the middle, and it takes a while before you figure out whether or not he's got a head. And that goes pretty slow at first.
You know. Massive Silent Hill vibes, that.
Yes. that's what I thought. It was a Silent Hill kind of person / creature. And she's just slowly moving to one side, and it slowly moves parallel to her.
Yes, yeah.
Like, oh, no.
Yeah, that was good and well done.
Still.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I just thought that this has enough creative, interesting things in it. And I'm betting if I knew more about Korean culture, I would probably get even more out of it. And Korean history, like, I knew when they mentioned, like, the former president at one point knew the director of this facility, and Charlotte, I believe she's supposed to be a Korean American, is like, who's that? You know, she doesn't know that he was president of the country, literally, at one point. And I bet there's things in the background in her office, and maybe some things in the graffiti that's in Korean that would be, you know, add to the creepiness factor of it that I'm just missing as you know, ignoramus American who speaks one language well, and that's about it.
I did have a similar thought myself with that exact thing, that there are probably cues that we just don't pick up on, that might just enrich this a little bit. But it's certainly not a hindrance to the film, I wouldn't say.
No, I still think it's very creepy.
Yeah. Well, have you got much more you'd like to say about it? Or?
No, I think we talked about all the interesting bits. I think I don't know if it was a disappointment or something that I should have predicted or something, when the producer puts on his own cam and goes charging in near the end because he thinks his crew is giving it up. They confess that they set up some of the scares and,
right, yeah,
you know, in trying to get everybody out, and he's like, no, I'm gonna finish this, and he goes in. And I don't know how I would want that handled otherwise, though, really, as to like what to do with his character. Maybe just the tent collapse on him or something, and he gets sucked into the ground, or some interesting creative thing. But, you know, I do like the wrap up, just showing the kind of the aftermath on the YouTube page of what people are saying after it finishes. And it turns out that it was all for nothing, that none of the really scary stuff that happened for real in the last room got broadcast.
Yeah. No, that's actually quite interesting, really, isn't it? And a bit of a sort of failure on their part. And yeah, you're right.
He's come up and doesn't he? Which is what you want from horror movie assholes.
Fair. Fair.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame everybody else gets it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
Ji Hyun, she's trying to make it out and she's the one who gets, you know, taken over first.
They try their best. Even Charlotte, yeah. She thinks she's got to the tent and then straight up back in the asylum.
Yeah, that was creepy. That's always
when
a horror movie comes up with sudden change of location and people have no idea what just happened.
Yeah.
That weird chicken thing as well.
Oh, you forgot about the weird chicken.
I bet that's one of the cultural things that I'm missing. So.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it does feel like that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, lovely. So, I didn't put this out on the Facebook because I must admit I'd assume nobody would have seen it, but I probably should have done. Oh, well, my own stupid fault. So we don't have any comments from people on it. So all it does is for us to review it, which is there are three tiers for this. We haven't had the three tiers in a while. It seems like we've just done continuous creative psychopaths. But we have got shit for, well, it's shit. And ooh, it's spooky for sort of middle of the road and a creative psychopath for as good as it can be. So I'm going to go in first on this, and I'm actually going to go for the top end of ooh, it's spooky, because I actually think it's the sort of found footage movie that I would recommend to people, but I also don't think it's really doing anything new. So yeah. Matthew?
I think I'm in tune with you there. I did enjoy watching it. I think I probably could have enjoyed it more if I'd have done it properly, which I'll take the blame for. But yeah, it didn't quite hit those heights. We didn't quite sing the way that I would have liked. So I'll give it the ooh, it's spooky as well.
Just for you then, Nicole.
I think I would agree. I would put it at the very high end of ooh, it's spooky. You know, I don't think it's the very best that it could be, but it, you know, particularly for the found footage sort of sub, I don't know if I want to say subgenre, but, you know, format.
Yeah.
I think it's on the top end of that.
Yeah.
I think they've done a lot of good things with the budget that they had.
I absolutely agree. And I will recommend this movie to people. But I guess the thing with found footage movies is it's very, very rarely churning out anything that we haven't seen by this point. There aren't that many original things, really. It's a shame.
That's what I'm always hoping for, though.
Yes, yeah, I love the found footage genre. I'll watch anything in found footage. So, yeah, lovely. Right, well, let's get into the second slice. But before we do, don't forget, everyone, that we've got lovely social medias that you can join. Instagram. There's not a lot going on over there, but why not join it anyway? And, of course, the Facebook group, where we generally post what movie we're going to be watching, and you can put a little comment in and then have your name read out on the podcast, which is exciting to always hear your name read by someone else. But, yeah, go find them.
I mean, depends who.
Well, it's me. I read them, I suppose, or you do.
Well, yeah, I'm just going to say, you know, if it's a judge, I don't really want them reading my name out anytime soon.
Oh, right, yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah, or that kid with the Death Note book, you don't want that.
No.
Don't write my name in there. Yeah, lovely. Right, so, what am I doing? Yeah, create a side pass everywhere you go. Look for it. We're there. With friendly arms or something. So then, Nicole, let's get into these last questions. So
I'm ready.
Let's start with, what's the worst horror you've seen?
Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. I watched it out of curiosity because so many people like this movie. And so I stuck with it, hoping the whole time that it was going to turn this corner and I would suddenly understand the love for it. But like the whole tone and the execution, it was just, I just found it like icky and not really scary and not as funny as it thinks it is. And I just did not care for it at all. It was not my jam.
Well, I wasn't expecting that.
You let out a little gasp, didn't you?
I did. I did. Well, like I say, like you just said, it's sort of quite universally loved, so I wasn't expecting that. But I see your point. It's definitely not as funny as it thinks it is. So I agree with you on that. And I think there's just something about it being so different from the original that's why I like it. And it's sort of, I think Toby Hooper really didn't want to make a sequel. So when he did make it, he was like, we'll have this because this has got nothing. This is nothing like what you've just seen. Because he just plain didn't want to make it.
It just absolutely lost me when he put the chainsaw between Stretch's legs. And yeah. I just, no, nope, mm-mm. That was it for me.
Fair enough. And everyone's, of course, entitled to their very own opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you like it, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum, so to speak. It's just, it is not for me. So.
No. I can see why as well. Because that original one's an absolute, it is a masterpiece, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a bit of a sidestep. Well, what's your favorite then?
Currently, is it, you know, it changes. My favorite film of whatever genre is changing constantly. But at the moment, it's Bong Joon-ho's The Host. I think Bong Joon-ho is just such a master of juggling tones in a film. And this goes from, you know, comedy to slapstick to horror to action and just tragedy and just keeps going around. And I think East Asian horror in general is pretty good at that. They don't feel like they have to put movies in a box where it has to stay this one tone the whole time or people are going to get mad and leave a bad review on their, you know, film score when they leave the theater. But I mean, it's so good. That's one, I think the effects still hold up pretty well on the creature in that, and it's super creative on the creature design. That's not something I've ever seen before or since, really. And the performances are just so fantastic. I mean, you can never go wrong with Song Gung-ho in your movie. So, yeah, definitely highly recommend.
I think we were very gushing about that one. Yeah.
I agree with everything that you just said.
Me too.
Hooray.
The monster's weird though, right? Is that the one that looks like a fish? What does it look like?
Kind of got that look of those fish with the lights on the head, doesn't it? But with legs as well.
It's kind of like a giant water rhinoceros sort of thing. It's what it reminded me of. It's just this big lumbering kind of beast.
Yeah.
With a long tail so that it can swim well and swing from underneath the bridges.
Oh yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that is a great film. It's got so much heart though. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, I can't argue with that as an answer. Well, no, I wouldn't.
You're wrong. Your favorite horror movie is incorrect.
Yeah, well,
I think we've had that once on this podcast.
Really?
When my brother put Hereditary in the worst.
Oh, yes.
I don't think I've spoken to him since, actually.
Yeah, although somebody did say recently, said Midsommar, didn't they?
That's... As if that's a worst pick. Best pick, yes, I can see that. But worst, yeah. No. Just from a filmmaking standpoint.
I'll only take issue with the people saying best or worst if it's a blood relative. Anyone else are more than welcome to their own opinions.
Fair enough. So, but the last questions are, what's a scary moment for a non-horror movie that you remember?
Okay. I remember this freaking me out so much the first time I watched it because I was very young. In the original Superman movie from 1978, there's a scene where there's an earthquake and the road starts breaking up and Lois Lane is driving on it and her car falls into a crevice.
Mm-hmm.
And the crevice isn't that deep, but the window is open and dirt starts to fall into the car. And Lois is trapped in the car and slowly and horribly suffocates in the accumulating pile of earth. And Margot Kidder really sold the terror of those moments. And that scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
As a young child.
Oh, well, I'll always happily hear a Superman thing. Yeah, you're right, though. But it's a skid. She really does a good job of, like you say, it's a proper impending doom that, and then Superman does his selective time travel. I always love that.
Yeah, that's, you know,
it wasn't until
that one. I just have to hand wave because it's just, what you gonna do?
It wasn't until recently that I realized that he turns back time, which I'm fine. I don't mind him turning back time, but the missiles don't come back. So he doesn't have to deal with
I don't know.
It's selective.
Or
does he
go to LA first and then off to New Jersey? Or does he let New Jersey just bite it?
I have no idea.
To save Lois first.
I have no idea. But yeah. Oh, I love that movie. I wish we had a podcast I could talk about that movie on.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
it's a little bit dated, but it's got so much good going for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we have a podcast where we talk about that? Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. We'll do it then. We'll talk about Superman one day. Well, then, if you could make any non-horror movie a horror movie, what would you choose?
This was a hard question. I was like, what would be the most challenging? So I would say Mansfield Park, just for the challenge of it. And you could make it into a creepy stalker movie where Fanny Price one by one takes out all the people who've crossed her and saves the most awful death for her manipulative Aunt Norris. And then at the end, she forces her first cousin Edmund to marry her. So, that's the horrific climax of the film.
Yeah. No, I would happily watch that.
Yeah,
just gotta do the right casting for Fanny Price. I'm not sure who you would get for that, but I think it could work. It could work.
Yeah,
I think just the idea of somebody that, like, if we did it modern day, because somebody in this day and age being called Fanny would be, but in their perspective, a horror for sure.
Yeah,
sure. I mean, it's bad enough in the U.S., but it's worse in Britain, from what I understand.
Yeah, it's not one that's brought up in polite conversation.
So
yeah. Oh, lovely. Yeah, that's a good idea. There's an idea there, because they went through a stage recently, didn't they, of turning those older books into horror books. Wasn't there Pride and Prejudice and Zombies?
Right, yeah.
I think Abraham...
What Austin have they not done?
Yeah, well, they might as well do this. Yeah.
Was there a Love in the Time of Cholera as well? It was like Love in the Time of Cholera and Werewolves or something.
I don't know.
You think
sounds
cholera
good, though,
would be bad enough?
You would. Do the werewolves have cholera too? Is my question.
Can a werewolf get cholera?
Because if they do, then it's easy. It's just a waiting game.
Oh.
Yeah, well, questions have been asked and we don't know the answers to them. And we'll maybe find out one day when we come back to this podcast. But for now, it's time to start wrapping things up. So, Nicole, do you have things you'd like to plug, make people go to places?
You can look up on any of your podcast apps, the Movie Duel podcast, which I am on part of the time since Peter has rotating co-hosts.
Yeah.
I have a Letterboxd account at Nicole_Davis. And if you want, you can look up one of my old podcasts, Movie Go Round or Geek Cinema Society. There are a lot of back episodes that you can look up if you like. But I would emphasize Movie Duel because that is still ongoing and we can take your suggestions and feedback and, see if we can't make the show better for all of you who are listening.
Yeah. No, that sounds good.
Lovely.
Yeah. Actually, I think you're the one to blame for the question. Well, not blame. Liminal space. Yeah.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah. I still don't think I got that right.
Just the
Yeah,
Overlook Hotel, and that's pretty much, that
but
was the one we couldn't touch because it was
we're
too
not out.
obvious.
Banned from that though. Yeah.
I ended up choosing a razor head, which I don't even think was a liminal space, but whatever.
I went for annihilation.
Oh, well, fair, lovely. Yeah, so go listen to the Movie Duel podcast as if we haven't told you a million times. But now you've got someone else you can go listen to. You've listened to Peter, you've listened to Vanessa, now you can go listen to Nicole. So, stop listening to this and go listen to that. Because we're at the end, you should have listened up until now. Look,
And
let's
we
just
will
go.
complete the set eventually.
We will. Right. Bye, everyone.
Toodaloo.
Bye-bye.